KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke, Portland, Oregon. Liberal, quirky, white, and racist? You might associate American racism with the South, but historically, Oregon has been hostile to African Americans.
In 1859, when the state entered the Union, it was the only state that forbade black people from living there. Basically, if you live there and you're black, you had to leave, and if you didn't, you'd be flogged until you left.
Alana Semuels wrote about Oregon's racist history for The Atlantic, and she's not just talking about Eastern Oregon. She says racism is part of Portland's past and present. She gave the recent example of black employees filing a lawsuit against Daimler Trucks in Portland.
They'd find hangman's nooses in their lockers or, the N-word or other words kind of carved onto the walls. So these are African-American employees. So those are very blatant kind of racist things that happen. And then there's kind of a more subtle racism. You know, black people told me about walking into a restaurant and it suddenly gets quiet. There's discrimination in real estate. So there's a few studies done that showed when minorities applied for apartments, they were charged more or turned down more frequently. And I think there's also just kind of a tone deafness of a lot of people. There's a blog called, for lack of a better word, Stuff White People Say to Black and Brown Folks in PDX, and just, you know, things that people encounter on a daily basis. I think often because there are so many white people and so few minorities that people don't necessarily know how to act and what to say and say things that are really pretty insensitive.
You tick off some numbers, too, about school suspensions and incomes and poverty levels and home ownership. And you also get into something we're familiar with in Seattle, which is black displacement. Will you tell us about that in Portland?
Sure. I mean, from the very early days, black people could only live in certain neighborhoods in Portland. People wouldn't buy or sell or rent houses to them. But every time they kind of settled in a neighborhood starting with near the train station downtown, the city would come in and call the area a slum and say it needed to be kind of redone. And so they'd tear a bunch of stuff down and all the people living there had to move. So this happened a number of times. They were displaced by a hospital. They were displaced by freeways. They were displaced by just a project that wanted to put in kind of different stuff on the ground. And it's happening now. The neighborhood is called Albina, and it used to be kind of abandoned and really derelict, and largely because people weren't allowed to buy homes, and there are a lot of predatory mortgage institutions that came in, knowing that banks wouldn't loan to black people, so they could take advantage of people who were really just desperate to try to own something. You see people being displaced even today, and that's also creating racial tensions.
Some of us may know a recent symbol of gentrification, which was Trader Joe's. Will you tell us the story?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really interesting story. Trader Joe's wanted to come in to Albina, which is a historically black neighborhood. And the Portland Development Commission, which has undertook a lot of these urban renewal efforts, gave them a big discount. They said, you know, here's how much you'll have to pay. It was way less than market value if you want to come here. And the Portland African American Leadership Forum, which is a group in the city, said, you know, hold on a second. You're giving this company a big discount and you haven't really invested in the community. You haven't made sure that African Americans stay. And if this Trader Joe's comes in, it's going to be one more step of things that are going to make this neighborhood more expensive and probably displace people. So they said, you know, if you're going to do this, you really need to think twice about it and make sure that people aren't going to be displaced. And Trader Joe's kind of said, you know, maybe we're not going to come. And this led to a big controversy. You know, people saying, oh, black people don't like Trader Joe's and they're not, you know, they're trying to hold the city hostage. When really what was happening was this group was saying, you know, this has been a long time of displacement, a long time of things coming in and displacing the people who lived here. And maybe it's time to kind of think about the consequences. And I think really the response to the Trader Joe's wanting to come in is the interesting part, because it really signaled to me a tone deafness of the kind of, quote, white progressive population that didn't really understand the history.
I want to talk about this white progressive image. The image a lot of us have of Portland is Portlandia, where quirky liberals are feverishly trying to out-progressive each other. What is the reality, do you think, in Portland?
I mean, I think that can be the reality at the same time that progressive liberals don't understand the history or, you know, think really about the African-American or minority population, because as this displacement has happened, a lot of the African-Americans have been moved to the far reaches of the city, which does not look like Portlandia. It looks much more kind of urban and industrial. And, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So, you know, some people told me that they'd try to have meetings about this in the community. And before any of the African Americans could get up to speak, there'd be 60, you know, white people on the list of people who wanted to speak who would come and talk about the environment. So I don't think necessarily all of this is kind of intentional. I think it's just this, Portland is a very white place where people bike and, you know, they like the environment, they like to be outside, but they don't necessarily have to think about the people who they've displaced by doing that.
Well, if the racist institutions are history, official redlining is over, official segregation, government-sanctioned segregation is supposedly over, what else could Portland do now?
I mean, I think there is starting to be an awareness that people are being displaced. The city is undertaking this program where when it builds or when it's partners with developers to build affordable housing, people who have been in the neighborhood for a long time, neighborhoods like Albina for a long time, get priority. But I think they could you know, do a lot more. When I talked to both the city and state about race and history, no one really wanted to talk to me. No one really had anything to say. And I think maybe by addressing this issue and kind of saying, you know, we know that this happened and we know that it's still a problem, and we're really going to be aggressive about combating it, I think that would be a good step to take.
I'm talking with Alana Samuels, staff writer for The Atlantic. We're talking about Portland, Alana, but I'm talking to you from another liberal, majority white city with a past of developing policies favoring basically white supremacy. The history is there. What lesson do you think Seattle takes from your research and your article?
I think one part of it is really acknowledging the history. I mean, I was really shocked, actually, how many emails and notes I got from people who said, I had no idea, you know, I've lived in Portland for a long time, or I've thought about moving to Portland. I had no idea any of this had happened. So I think, you know, making that more of a priority or making that history more accessible. But I think also, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of the minorities in Portland have been displaced to far reaches of the city. And I think having something to bring different races together and kind of just having a dialogue about what's going on that isn't couched in, you know, we're putting in bike lanes and the black people like this and the white people don't, or we're putting in a Trader Joe's and the black people like this and the white people don't. I mean, having a lot more nuanced discussions about development and displacement, I think, is certainly really important. And that's almost always going to be led by whoever's in charge and, you know, whoever's at the top.
Well, there's one idea for dealing with a racist past and present, and it's something we're about to talk about in a moment, which is reparations. And I know you've been thinking about that yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. My colleague Ta-Nehisi Coates has this great cover story for The Atlantic a couple of years ago called The Case for Reparations, kind of saying, you know, this absolutely racist and horrible past has really disadvantaged African Americans for life. I mean, you can't own homes, you can't have jobs. This is going to create generations of poverty, and it's maybe time to do something about that. You know, he goes more into how that exactly would work, and I think it could be difficult, but certainly, you know, making it easier for people who have historically been discriminated against to buy homes or to live in certain neighborhoods or to get certain jobs, you know, that could certainly be a start.
Alana Samuels is a staff writer for The Atlantic. We're tweeting out a link to her story, The Racist History of Portland, the Whitest City in America.